Barcelona Nights by Otmar Liebert CD, Nueve Comico, and that's just because I love it. It's upbeat and it stimulates the liver and the pancreas because the frequency in it contains the note of D, and it just fills you full of energy. You're tuned to Health Sound Health at BBS Radio, the station that stands with the people and for the people, bringing you the rest of the story when the national media refuses to tell you the truth. BBS Radio puts the media back in the hands of the people. This is Sherry Edwards. I'll be your host for the next hour. This show is sponsored by the Sound Health Research Institute and the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. And on this show, we strive to bring you information and ideas to help you support the idea of self-help in both your personal life and in your community and your nation. We have a guest today, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She's going to talk to us about school-mandated vaccinations and the pressure parents are being put under to have their children vaccinated when in reality it makes no logical sense to do so and in many cases causes great harm. We will be with Dr. Tenpenny in just a few minutes. I want to make some important announcements. The first announcement concerns the insanity of our present government policies. I want to encourage all of you to go to bbsradio.com, run your internet, and listen to the short 6-minute video entitled The Second American Revolution. It makes so much common sense and lets you know how you can help stop the destruction of what this country stands for and what our forefathers had hopes of achieving for all of us in the centuries to come after the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, both of which have been incredibly eroded. After you view that, go down a bit on the front page of BBS Radio and make a note to listen to the interview with Vincent Gugliosa about the Bush presidency. I can't talk tonight. That's going to be happening on BBS Radio on August 20th. Another eye-opener. And our last announcement, we are still in need of clinicians and instructors to help with our projects to evaluate traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder that we are doing for the military with the hopes of helping our returning soldiers. They need help in these acoustic blasts. Information and there's just not a help for them. We're developing a special 2-day class to help with this. If you're interested, please get in touch. We have programs starting with just an hour and free to a full week-long professional training. And we do have an online introductory course that you can view anytime. Go to our website, Nutrasounds.com, N-U-T-R-A. Sounds, that's plural, Nutrasounds.com. There'll be a link there for that free online, open 24 hours a day introductory course, and it'll teach you to use that free downloaded program we gave you, nanovoice.org. So if you haven't downloaded that, nanovoice.org. If you have the vision and you want to make a difference, join us and we'll work with you to make things happen. And please get your free vocal profiling program. The manual's right there with it. It's absolutely free. We don't even ask for your email address. We're hoping that you'll get in contact with us because we have other classes that will teach you how to use the program, and those are also free. we think this is important because we think everybody has a right to know about vocal profiling and how to use it to take care of their health. When you use the program, probably what it gives you back about your personality won't tell you much different from what you think you are or who you or your friends think you are. But what is surprising is that the computer can give you information back about yourself, and that's what we want to introduce to people. Okay, we're going to talk to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny this evening. She's an osteopathic physician. She's written several books, has an active medical practice in Ohio, where she combines the best of both conventional and alternative medicine. She's a lecturer, writer, regular guest on radio and television. I'm going to talk about her most recent book that came out in July of this year. So it's just, what, 2 months, a month old? And the name of the book is Saying No to Vaccines. Welcome to the show, Dr. Tenpenny.
Thank you and good evening.
It's great to have you on. I loved your book. It's just, I especially love Chapter 3. I can't get over the absolute outpouring of information that has been absolutely referenced, incredibly referenced, and you're going against convention here. You're really sticking your neck out.
Well, it's not anything new. I've been doing this for about 8 years now. My background is in emergency medicine. I was the director of the ER at Blanchard Valley Hospital in Findlay for almost 12 years. And then I moved to Cleveland in 1996, and I've had an integrative medicine practice here since that time. And I've been involved with the vaccine issue since September of 2000. So it's been something that's been part of my life. It's now just kind of part of me. And after 8,000 hours of research and doing 2 DVDs and writing 2 books and speaking all over the world on the problems associated with vaccines, I have little doubt in my mind that vaccines can cause problems, and there's a whole lot better ways to stay healthy.
When you went to medical school, did they try to convince you that vaccinations were needed?
You know, honestly, I don't really even remember us talking about it. I think it was just such a given and so just an accepted normal that I really don't even remember much conversation about it.
When looking at your book, Saying No to Vaccines, what are some of the reasons we should say no?
Some of the most important reasons are the sheer number of vaccines that we get now. Kids now get, if they get every recommended vaccine, they will have 69 vaccines by the time they're 6 months of age and 113 by the time they start kindergarten. Now, that's not 113 shots because many of the vaccines are combined together into one shot, but each one of those vaccines are separate. For example, MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, those are 3 different vaccines even though they're administered in one shot. So the sheer number is just staggering. And then you've got measurable amounts of chemicals in each one of those vaccines. The vaccines, you can get the vaccine and still get sick even though you've assumed all the risk of the vaccine. And there have been many studies that have shown that there's huge vaccine failure rates, and so even though that you've gotten the vaccine, you could still get sick, but then you've taken on all the risk of the vaccines.
Now, all of these are coming about, and how did our grandparents possibly live without all these vaccines?
Or the generations before, Yes, we've been on the humans, we've been, you know, have a history of at least 30,000 years that we know of. And so when were the epidemics and what caused many of them? They were all caused by poor hygiene, lack of public sanitation. Even the bubonic plague and the black plague through the Middle Ages was all spread by rats and mice. And so the public health ramifications of how we've just gotten better by eating better and sleeping better and doing things like washing our hands after going to the bathroom before you eat dinner, and we've got flush toilets now. And so much of the public health steps forward have really been due to just public health improvements in sanitation. And that comes really from the CDC's website. It really isn't just conjecture. I mean, there's definite documentation out there to prove that. And I think the follow-up to what your question was rather asking was that, where did we get to having so many vaccines? The vaccination schedule is, because I have a lot of people and a lot of parents that will say things to me like, you know, I have teenagers. I just really don't remember them getting that many vaccines. Well, the truth of the matter is that they didn't, because as recently as 1985, we only had three vaccines, really. We had measles, mumps, rubella, we had DPT, and we had polio. And that was really it. And kids got those three vaccines, and they were pretty much spread out and spread apart. And since 1991, we now have 15 or 16 different and distinct vaccines, and many of them have a multiplicity of antigens in them. So it's really just been in the last 15 to 20 years that we've seen the ramp up.
Now, we have a story here in our office. A lady that works with us is a grandmother, and her granddaughter had already gotten one of these shots that deal with chickenpox, and the grandmother lived in the house. The girl got a very mild case of chickenpox. The grandmother ended up getting shingles out of it. The shingles were so bad it caused a heart attack, and they ended up giving her a pacemaker. She was in the hospital over 3 months over this. So I think one of the things they need to consider, well, first, no vaccine, but second, who else is in the household that could it cause a problem for?
Yes, and it's in the chickenpox vaccine that they estimate that somewhere between 3% and 5% of the kids that get vaccinated with the chickenpox vaccine do shed that virus actively, and can cause chickenpox in other children, and very much can cause the shingles reaction in adults. So I'm sorry to hear that about your patient, but it doesn't really surprise me.
Well, they need to. I think one of the cautions for parents is not only the children being damaged, but the other people in the house.
You know, it's interesting, though, what the CDC is now proposing, and particularly with the flu shot, is that the reason that kids need to get flu shots is to protect the elderly. So now we're trying to vaccinate some people to protect other people. I mean, will it, this nonsense ever stop? I mean, it's vaccinating for the sake of vaccinating. There's an international vaccine conference that's coming up in December, and I've looked at the agenda for this conference. It's actually being held in China, and there is barely a bug that you can think of in terms of a virus or a bacteria that isn't under development to try to find a vaccine for, and there's barely a health condition that you can think of between, you know, heart disease and high blood pressure and high cholesterol and periodontal disease, and the list is almost endless of all the things that they're trying to find a vaccine for, because in the pharmaceutical industry, it is the one sector that is growing by double digits, and it has been growing in 16 to 21% increased annualized economic growth over the last 5 to 7 years, and they're expecting that to double over the next 10 years.
Well, after looking at your book, I think it should be the Bible for vaccines.
Well, thank you. How nice is that? And if people are interested in it, it's called Saying No to Vaccines, and it's very simple. You can get it at sayingnotovaccines.com.
That's great, because it's out of print, or it's out of stock at Amazon, because I tried to look it up.
Wow.
So I was going to ask you where people could get it, so would you repeat that?
They can get it from Amazon, and if you place an order at Amazon, they will send us an invoice. So it usually comes by email that will say we need 3 copies or 8 copies or 20 copies or however many, and they can send, and we will, that's how Amazon works, is they will tell you, they'll look at how many orders are coming in, and then they usually double the numbers. So if they've gotten 5 orders, they will send us a notice saying that they need to have 10 copies of our book. So you can get it at Amazon. It's not listed at Barnes & Noble's, or you can get it directly from our website, which is sayingnotovaccines.com or drtenpenny.com.
That's T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y.
That's right, and it's D-R, no period, just drtenpenny.com.
I love that name. What damage does vaccinations do?
Oh gosh, the list is endless. In fact, the list is endless. In terms of, it's almost easier to say what kind of damage don't they cause. I mean, they can cause things like seizure disorders and autoimmune diseases and all kinds of neurological disorders and neurological complications. They can cause rashes and fevers and urticaria, chronic hives. I mean, it just every organ system can be involved.
Here's a quote from Dr. Mayer Eisenstein, MD and JD, jurisprudent, an attorney. A quote from your book, we don't have a single case of autism in an unvaccinated child. That's incredible.
Well, I think that's probably true. In fact, I was just interviewed on Friday by MSNBC.com for an online thing that they're doing for a back-to-school special. And they were one of the and she was a very good interviewer. And one of the questions that she asked me towards the end of the interview was, is there any middle ground? I mean, you hear all the CDC people and the pediatric people and all these people saying that not only must you vaccinate, you shouldn't spread them out, and you shouldn't do one at a time, and you shouldn't just cut back. I mean, we're putting everybody at risk, and we must do 100% of it 100% of the time. And then you've got people like me and you and other people who've done their homework saying, it's the antithesis of that. I'm not doing vaccines ever for any reason. And her question was, is there any middle ground? And I said, yes, I believe there is. And I believe that the middle ground is that we absolutely must do the good research on comparing groups of unvaccinated children and adults to vaccinated children and adults and looking at their health profiles and actually honestly doing the research and seeing the difference. It's not just autism that you'll see the difference. It's kids that are non-vaccinated have a much lower incidence of asthma and allergies and eczema and ADD and ADHD and cancer and all these other things that we must look at those overall health profiles. That's number one. And the second thing is I believe there's a lot of parents who haven't really done their homework and they want to trust their doctors. And so, okay, I'm willing to vaccinate, but I don't think they need all of them and I don't want to give them all at the same time. I think if the public health officials and the pediatricians would stop being so militant and they would allow parents to pick and choose and they would allow parents to spread things out, then they would be able to maintain their public health program. But what's going to happen is the whole thing is going to just implode.
Why are these doctors so militant?
Well, follow the money. I mean, in a pediatrician's office, every child that's get fully vaccinated, that is worth somewhere, you know, do all the vaccines over a five-year period of time, that's worth somewhere between $1,700 and $2,500 in revenue per child.
Oh.
And so that's what they, you know, they give the child the injection and they bill the insurance company and the insurance company reimburses them. The CDC's own data says that any given pediatrician's office, just a single pediatrician, each one of them, so if it's a five-person pediatrician office, that they will have somewhere around $50,000 worth of vaccine inventory sitting on their shelves. So just like any business, if you go out and buy inventory, and it doesn't matter if it's a vaccine or if it's a widget or if it's a chair, it doesn't matter. Once you've spent the money on that inventory, you need to move it. You need to move the inventory out. Recoup your money and make a profit. And that's what vaccines are in pediatrician and family practice offices. They are a product that needs to be sold. And not only that, but many of those products have short, tight shelf lives on them. For example, a flu shot only has 3 to 4 months. They got to move it out. And most of the vaccines only have somewhere between a 2 and maybe 3 year shelf life. So if they let it sit on and it expires, that's just like taking dollars and throwing it in the wastebasket.
How does the government and the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors get away with feeding us this trash that just isn't true?
It's a long time in coming. It started in 1905 when they passed the Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which is when the person when Reverend Jacobson from Massachusetts went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and tried to refuse the smallpox vaccine for himself and his son, who had had one vaccine already and had a bad reaction from it. And there was an outbreak in Massachusetts, and they were trying to revaccinate everyone, and he was refusing. He paid a fine that wasn't good enough, and back in those days it was very different in terms of the court system, and he was able to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the ruling came back that said that in the event of an outbreak, the U.S. government and the states have the right to protect the public health by vaccinating. Now, when you go back a step farther than that, how did we come to that ruling? It came from 1865, when the first mandatory vaccination laws were passed in the U.K. in 1865, and that was for smallpox. And as they started spreading smallpox around the world, of course, the incidence of tuberculosis and syphilis and gangrene and all those things went up exponentially because it was a filthy, awful vaccine that was just something they believed in. They had no science behind it. They just believed in it. from 1865 to 1905, that's what started happening here in the United States. By 1909 to about 1912, most of the states that we had at that time started passing mandatory vaccination laws. And some states said we don't believe in them, and so we gave philosophical exemptions. Everyone maintained the religious right to refuse, except in West Virginia and Mississippi. And it wasn't until 1968 when they developed the measles vaccine, and it was through Ted Kennedy's organization, the Kennedy organization, of which Ted Kennedy was then the executive director of their organization, that was trying to stop brain damage because of the one sister that had the brain damage, that they started pushing the measles vaccine as mandatory requirement for entry into school, and that was in 1968. So it's really only been over the last 40 years that our tax dollars have to be paid up front in exchange for the school requiring us to vaccinate our children even if we don't want to.
We want to talk a little bit about that, but before we do, I want to give our listeners the numbers they can call here to talk to Dr. Tenpenny, because we're going to talk about mandatory school vaccinations and what's going on with that. The USA 800 or toll-free number is 877-876-5227, and the Canadian number, 888-815-9756. If you can't get through there, direct number, 530-876-3222. You can always write me directly here. I'm watching the email radio@vocalprofiling.com. And if you can't remember those, just go to bbsradio.com. We're on station one tonight, and it's right on the front page. Okay, I want to ask a couple of questions about these mandatory school vaccinations. And we had an announcement of that you were going to be on, and a couple of people sent us incredible emails. So what are the ones that the school vaccinations that they're trying to push on parents today?
And this is for the state of Ohio, correct?
Yes.
Well, in the state of Ohio, there are no requirements for school. There are no requirements for school.
Oh, my God, they took one of our mothers here to court and tried to take her child away because she wouldn't get her kids vaccinated.
In the state of Ohio?
In the state of Ohio.
Well, a whole bunch of people there didn't know the law.
Accused her of being an unfit mother.
In the state, you know, that can come down sometime in divorce cases. That happens a lot, and I've testified a lot in those cases. But there are 19 states that have what's called a philosophical exemption. In the state of Ohio, all you need to do is to write about a two-sentence thing that says, pardon me, I've done my homework. I have looked at the vaccines. I have decided that I believe the risk of the vaccines are greater than the risk of the disease, and I'm refusing vaccines for my child. That's it. Turn it into the school system. You're done.
One of the things my daughter said, and she hasn't had her children vaccinated, she said, if I find out somebody has the measles, I'm going to take my children there and expose them. I want them to have the measles while they're young and make their own immune system work.
There's a lot of people that say that. I get a lot of phone calls and emails asking if there's been outbreaks of chickenpox so that we can take their kids for chickenpox parties and for measles and mumps and all of those things. But the school if the parent asks for an exemption form, the school by law is supposed to provide it. If you can't find a form, or if they won't give it to you, or I've had parents tell me that they were the first parent in the history of the school system to ever ask for an exemption form, there's a sample letter that you can write, and please write it in your own language. But if you go to drtenpenny.com and you click on the top button where it says forms, it will take you to a page where and then there's another button where it says sample exemption form. You can download that and take a look at it, and you can see what needs to go in that letter. If you want to very simply see a copy of the state law and see how simple it is, you can go to the website, which is the National Vaccine Information Center website, which is N like Nancy, V like Victor, I like Iris, C like Charlie, NVIC.org. And on the left-hand side of that home page, you scroll down just a little bit, it says school exemptions, or state exemptions, I believe it says. If you click on that, you'll come to a map that looks like the map of the United States. and you can just see where Ohio is, and you can click on Ohio or Pennsylvania or Michigan or whoever might else might be listening to this, and you can get a copy of your state law.
That's great. Here's another question that came in. This one isn't signed. I have a son who just turned 13. We recently paid a visit to his doctor for his sports physical. She then informed me that it is now recommended that he receive 3 new vaccinations, one for Hep A, one for meningococcal, and one for meningococcal meningitis, and one for HPV. Why do we have so many new vaccines for teens, and why HPV?
Did she start out by saying her son?
Her son.
Yeah, well, it's, the HPV vaccine is not recommended, it has not been recommended or approved or even tested for boys yet. That vaccine given will give that doctor $130 in his pocket, is the only thing I can think of the reason why that they recommended it. It's not recommended for boys. The meningitis vaccine has a black box warning on it to warn against the potential for getting Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is an ascending paralysis that starts at your feet and can go all the way up to your neck, and you can end up on a ventilator for months because of that vaccine. And it can cause death. And there have been many reported, and both the HPV vaccine and the meningitis vaccine in girls given together has a very high incidence of Guillain-Barré. And the hepatitis A vaccine is completely unnecessary. If you contract hepatitis A, it is a diarrhea disease that you have about 1 week of looks like the stomach flu. You get a little bit of jaundice in your body, a little bit of yellow in your eyes. It goes completely away within 2 to 3 weeks. No long-term complications, no side effects, and then you end up with lifetime immunity. It's a stomach flu that you end up with a little bit of yellow eyes, and that's it.
Oh, good. Here's another one right behind it. Why does my 12-year-old son need a HPV shot that would only be pertinent if he was a sexually active female?
Well, let's broaden out that, 'cause that's a very good question, and let's broaden it out just a little bit. Why does your son need it? He doesn't. Does your daughter need it? She doesn't need it either. There have now been almost 20 deaths reported that have been associated with the Gardasil, the HPV vaccine, and more than 8,000 reported side effects. Many of them are stroke-like symptoms. Many of them are that these girls faint, pass out, because they have a stroke-like symptom. They have slurred speech. Just today, I just saw that they had a report that came out about how they are now going to investigate that the HPV, this Gardasil vaccine, is causing pancreatitis. It is a vile vaccine that from the time it first came out, the first thing that went through my head is, once we start using this vaccine in 9 to 12-year-old girls, I truly believe that down the road, 10, 15 years from now, we're going to have serious infertility problems.
Pancreatitis is life-threatening.
It certainly can be, and it certainly is not a disease that you generally see in young children or in teenagers. The HPV, and the truth about the HPV infection is that during the course of a woman's lifetime, almost all women have an HPV infection. It's sort of like, you know, almost everybody has a cold sometime in their life. More than 98% of women who've had HPV, it goes away totally on its own without doing anything. It's only the 2% that stay persistent that needs to have some interaction or some intervention. That all happens in most women when they're in their 40s. HPV cancer is usually picked up by the time women are in their 40s. And all of it can be avoided by annual pap smears. The other thing is that what I found in my own office is those couple of women, those 2% of women that have persistent HPV infections, it's a nutritional deficiency. If they start taking certain supplements like vitamin A and beta carotene, vitamin C, IC3, indole carbinol, and DIM, which are the active ingredients in broccoli, and in the appropriately aged women, give them natural progesterone, the HPV infections go away in 2 months or less.
And you're listening to BBS Radio, and the book that we're talking about here is Saying No to Vaccines. And if you've seen the book, you know that Dr. Tenpenny has researched this thoroughly, and everything that she's telling you is absolutely the truth. We have a question from Chris. How soon do you see the system imploding? What changes or cracks in the system have you seen over the last year? And do you think Dr. Paul Offit is evil?
Oh, those were really good. Oh, I hope that that whoever gave that to you is listening. Those were really very good.
He is, because it just came in on the email.
Oh, good. The system is really imploding. The vaccine manufacturers know that their back's up against the wall. They're scrambling. There is more and more evidence that's going to be presented probably in the next 4 to 6 months that is going to start to show unequivocally. There's a diagnostic tool that's going to be coming out of Canada here between now and the end of the year. We're actually starting to do some experimentation with it in our office. It's non-invasive. It's a tool that can actually document that if someone's been vaccinated, they're having a neurological problem, and you can see it in real time. And we've done a study so far on just small studies of 10 to 15 people that were unvaccinated and have never been vaccinated. They have completely normal tests. For those that have been vaccinated, particularly the kids, you can see the abnormalities that show up in real time. That technology is going to be presented somewhere in the next 4 to 6 months at a couple of major vaccine conferences that I'm not at liberty to talk about yet. But I've been very involved with this whole development of this technology. And we're also well underway with using two companies outside of the country to develop treatments for vaccine-injured kids and adults.
Well,
the system, once they see it, once the industry sees it, once the doctors see it, they can't in good conscience continue. They just cannot.
I want to respond with two things to that. One, when you can announce this, we will certainly put it on our website and link it to our people. And two, we are working here at the Institute with a computer program called PreVac, and it's pre-vaccination risk factors. And we put in there indicators for wheat and milk allergies, methylation, metallothionine, and we've had some good success in reversing these kids by reversing some of the damage that's been done.
That's phenomenal. We should take a little bit closer look at that, Sherry, because I'll tell you what's actually happening in these kids. The mechanism of injury are microvascular strokes. That's what the mechanism is, and we're going to be able to prove it unequivocally here in about the next 4 to 6 months. And as to that last question about do I think Paul Offit is evil, well, I do think that he's bought and paid for. I don't know that I would say that he's evil, but he certainly has been bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry, and his reputation and his research and all those things are certainly in one direction that he gets paid quite well for that. And so it kind of comes down to follow the money.
Big dollar signs all over this. We have kind of a scary question. Is it true that if we refuse vaccination that our children can be taken away and we as parents can be put in concentration camps? And this is from Corrine in Ohio, and I think she's referring to the thing that is a Homeland Security law.
Well, I talked about that a lot in my other book. It's called Foul Bird Flu. It's called Foul, F-O-W-L, and it was written about the bird flu, but it was also a lot of politics in that book and also a lot about the flu shot. So if you're really interested in the flu shot and about the Homeland Security issues and the potential, looming potential for mandatory vaccination, I highly suggest that you get my other book. It's called Foul, and you can get it on drtenpenny.com. or on sayingnotovaccines.com. Is there a potential that that the laws could be passed so that mandatory vaccination could be put into place? Yes, there is. And could it be that on a national level through FEMA or some of these other organizations they could supersede state rights and require vaccination? Yes, they could. And they could do it more from the standpoint of you would have to have a completed vaccination record in order to cross state lines or to get on an airplane. Back in the 20s, they actually had a thing that happened in Chicago. There was a smallpox outbreak there, and they would not let people go in and out of the city unless they had proof of vaccination. So it's happened before. The point of the question about just routine vaccines like measles, mumps, rubella, DPT, refusing vaccines for school, could you be put in school and your children taken away? Really not in the state of Ohio. However, in New Jersey and in New York, where they don't have a philosophical exemption, those things have happened. And I'm actually now on an advisory board that's working behind the scenes and working very diligently to try to get those states to get laws passed in those states for them to be able to have philosophical exemptions.
As I read about FOUL that you were just talking about and your other book, What the CDC Documents and Science Reveal.
That's a DVD, actually. There's two books and two DVDs. The one book that we've been talking about, Saying No to Vaccines, which is a resource guide for all ages, and I might add, because there are a lot of vaccines that are now required and recommended for adults. So the book isn't just about children, it's also for adults. And there's about exemptions in there in terms of the military and travel vaccines and healthcare workers, and there's a whole lot of other information in that book. The other book is FOUL, Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think. We just call it the FOUL book. And that's sort of a play on words a little bit because it is about the flu shot and mandatory vaccination and politics. And then there's two DVDs. One DVD is Vaccines, What CDC and Science Documents Reveal, which talks about the bad science and the shoddy research behind the vaccine industry. And then the other DVD that we sell an enormous amount on that we have been for like the last 3 years is called the Risk Benefits Choices DVD. And that's a three-hour DVD that goes through each one of the individual vaccines and talks about the problems that can be associated with all of them. It's like the Paul Harvey page two, the rest of the story, like the things your pediatrician won't tell you. And it's a three-hour DVD, and it gets queued up to each one of the vaccines. You can watch them. I was hoping that by this fall I would have a new DVD out that would cover some of the new vaccines that have come out in the last 2 years, but I just think that my speaking and travel schedule is going to preclude that, so maybe I can get that done by the first of the year.
There's a DVD in this book, too. Can you tell people what's on that?
Yeah, I forgot about that. The book comes with, it's a 230-some-page book. It's completely indexed and referenced. There's more than 26 different types of sections of tables and of references that you can cross-reference them. What's in the vaccines, or you can look up a particular ingredient, and there's all kinds of references in the back in terms of your state laws. And then it comes with a 75-minute DVD that comes in the book. It's a 75-minute DVD on the Gardasil vaccine, the HPV vaccine that we've already talked about tonight. And the material on the DVD, about 90% of it is not in the book. So it's completely different material than what you would get if you just got the book alone. And so that's why we decided to couple them together and sell the book and the DVD.
Is there any vaccination we should get? Any at all?
Well, you know, that question comes up a lot, and I really don't think so. I mean, I would think that the only possibility might be if you have a serious type of injury, which is a deep puncture wound or a crush injury that absolutely cannot be cleaned out, and it's dirty. It's something from your yard or your garden or blacktop or something like that that cannot be cleaned out with soap and water and can't be washed out with peroxide and is so deep and such a bad injury that you might want to consider getting a tetanus shot or at least tetanus immune globulin at that point in time for being standard of care. However, and I talk about this a lot in the book, just getting a tetanus shot in and of itself is a false sense of security, because more than the last two big CDC studies that they did about tetanus is that 16% of people who've had four or more tetanus shots still contracted tetanus. So it goes back to a lot of the things we started out at the top of the hour. You can get the vaccine, assume all the risks of getting the vaccine, and get the disease anyways.
We have another question here. They wanted to vaccinate my baby within minutes of her birth. Isn't it better to wait, if you're going to get vaccines, to at least get some mother's milk immunity into your baby?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the vitamin K shot is the one that comes up a lot. They're supposed to give that one right after birth, and that's another big research white paper that I've got a bunch of information to read about. I've talked to a lot of moms who say that they just won't give the vitamin K shot. Instead, they would rather give their baby vitamin K drops, and they would rather take vitamin K themselves and pass it through the breast milk. that's a big pro and con issue that medical legally I can't come out and make a really strong statement about because of the potential for intravascular bleeding. However, I think that babies that are low risk probably do not need the vitamin K vaccine, and that there's other ways to get the vitamin K into the babies. The other one that's given usually before the baby leaves the hospital is the hepatitis B vaccine, which if I were independently wealthy and really had nothing much to do with my for the rest of my life, but just be a vaccine activist, I would spend the rest of my life making sure that no human would ever get that vaccine. The hepatitis B vaccine that they want to give to babies is the most neurotoxic, has the most problems and side effects ever documented in the medical literature, and yet they still want to give it to three-day-old babies. It's ridiculous.
How can they get away with that?
Well, the original paper that came out was published in 1991, said that, well, you know, hepatitis B is kind of an endemic disease. It's kind of rampant in Southeast Asia, so we ought to give these babies hepatitis B if they have mothers or fathers that are hepatitis B positive. And, oh, by the way, since we're doing that in Southeast Asia, why don't we just do it here? And that's how it started. And I'm not exaggerating. There was no need for it. There was no rampant hepatitis B going on in this country. They could just have easily tested. You know, we have hepatitis B testing in mothers and fathers during their prenatal care. There's absolutely no reason for it. There were less than 14,000 cases of hepatitis B in kids under the age of 15. So hardly any. There are about 4 million live births per age group. So there's about 4 million one-year-olds and 4 million two-year-olds and 4 million three-year-olds and all the way up. So there were out of 40 million children, there were less than 14,000 cases of hepatitis B across the country. But yet we decided that it was important to give hepatitis B to newborns. So that's a long-winded answer to your person there. And I want to add one other thing. I know this is kind of rambling on, but just being a little bit older doesn't necessarily make vaccination any safer. Vaccines have no respecter to age, and I do a lot of testifying in vaccine court for vaccine-injured adults. In fact, I just am finishing up a court case now with a 41-year-old professor who was vaccinated with two vaccines that he thought were necessary to go on. They were travel vaccines, and is now on lifetime disability. So just waiting until your child is 2 or 5 or 7 doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be any safer.
You know, I have this study memory in the back of my mind about California, about giving this Hep B shot, and more people died from the shot than died from the disease.
Well, that's really true, and that's true for pertussis, it's true for the flu, it's true for probably hepatitis B. It's, I'm sure, quite true for a lot of the vaccines.
Well, here's a loaded question. I love it. How did the state of New Jersey get away with rounding up children and their parents with guns and dogs and having children vaccinated under threat of imprisonment and taking their children away? Do we live in a police state?
Yes, we do. And just for the record, that wasn't New Jersey. That was Maryland. That happened in Baltimore. But
okay.
What everything else that was described there is actually absolutely accurate. And how they got away with it was that they based it on a truancy record that Maryland had, that they were missing some vaccination records, and they tried to get the parents to vaccinate the kids, and the kids had been missing for, I don't know, 30 days or something like that, because when they went to school, they sent them home because they weren't vaccinated. So for each day a child was missing from school, the school did not get for each day that the child was supposed to be sitting in that chair, the school was supposed to be getting $63 per child per day for sitting in that chair. When they had 1,800 kids that weren't vaccinated and were not sitting in those chairs for 30 days, that's 1,800 times 30 days times $63. That's a lot of money. So that's when the school system was not getting because of truancy. And so that's why they went to the court system and decided they were going to round up all those parents. And yes, that happened at gunpoint. And yes, there were dogs. And yes, they forced these kids to get vaccines. And what vaccines were they forcing them to get? Hepatitis B and chickenpox. So all of that happened over those two vaccines.
That,
it's speechless, isn't it?
Yeah, I just...
It just doesn't get any better.
I liken this to sacrificing virgins for a crop that happened centuries ago. It's that stupid. We're thinking we sacrifice these children and maim them so that maybe the next generation can be a little better off. But even that's stupid because you're talking about the infertility. Do you think this is just stupidity, or are they really trying to weed out some people that they don't want to breed? I mean, how crazy is this?
Well, I don't know. I don't try to go down the conspiracy theory route with a lot of it, just because... I think it's a real easy thing to do, and I think that when you, because it just, it's so bizarre, and there's so many just bizarre things going on with it, at some level you kind of think that that's the only possible explanation. But I honestly think that the explanation, it's just about fear and greed. And, you know, they're trying to make a buck, and they're, it's really about fear and greed. Now, if the fallout of that is that certain populations go away, or that certain populations are injured, well, that's just the way it is. I mean, I've known of attorneys who've sat in rooms and listened to conversations with high-level pharmaceutical officials that have said when they bring a new drug to market or a new vaccine to market that this is the exact language, that, well, we expect a certain percentage of wastage during this, and so so we'll just plan for it. And the wastage is deaths and damage and injuries. So when they bring a new vaccine to market or a new drug to market, they are already putting away money for legal fees and lawsuits and paying damages, because it's going to take 4 to 8 years for that to really sort of circle around through the court system. And by that time, they've made a lot of money, and they put, like, the money aside to just pay the damages in the meantime. I mean, that it's really follow the money.
That's one of the things we're trying to do with our PREVAC program, to look at, is this child's immune system prepared for this? And I want to ask you a couple of questions about that, if I could. Throughout your book, it talks about the immune system being compromised. How does the vaccination that's supposed to enhance the immune system really compromise it?
It's like, if you think of it this way, if you think that there's 20 people in a house, and you all have wireless walkie-talkies talking to each other, and they're cued in on really specific frequencies. This, your frequencies are really, you know, in your world. So you've got 20 people, 20 walkie-talkies on a certain frequency, and it has to be that specific wireless frequency for them to be able to talk to each other. And suddenly you throw a big magnet, or you just throw some big thing right in the middle of the room, so it loses the frequency, and you can't talk to each other, and you can't connect, and it's staticky, and you only get a partial message. That's kind of what happens inside of the immune system. You've got all of these pieces and parts of cytokines, very specific proteins, very specific white blood cells, hormones, all in balance. You've got all these things, and from the time a baby's first born up through the first four or five minutes of their life up through they're a year or 2 years of age, all of those walkie-talkies are trying to figure out how to talk to each other. And now from the time, but the, their birth, and then at 2, 4, and 6 months, you've given them 69 vaccines that's cut all of the communication processes. And they can't talk to each other anymore, and they have to figure out ways to kind of send, you know, paper airplanes to each other to get a message across there. And all of these different things start happening that disrupt that immune system, cause asthma and allergies and eczema and brain dysfunction and ADD and colic and GERD and every type of organ system that you can think of, depending on where the thing has been disrupted. That's kind of the visual that helps you understand how vaccines go in and disrupt that whole immune system communication.
Well, does it compromise everyone, and it's just a matter of degree, or is there just a bomb sitting there waiting to happen?
I don't know that you can just say it compromises every single person, but I sure think that it has the potential to. It's like Russian roulette, you know, whoever gets the bullet gets the bullet. And instead of like in Russian roulette where there's, you know, six holes for the bullets, and usually there's only one bullet and five of them are empty, it's almost the opposite. In this case, there's five bullets and one of them is empty. And so it's really the luck of the draw. And I think that most people that have been vaccinated have that risk, whether it happens today or tomorrow or next week or next year. It depends on how big the risk is in their particular life.
One of the things I can't understand is why the government and the pharmaceutical companies have this big fund to pay for damaged children, yet at the same time they say there's no damage. That's not even logical.
Yeah, isn't that kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, and they've paid out $1.8 billion, with a B, more than $1.8 billion in damages since 1982. And the fund is getting bigger, and there's more and more people that they're paying out to. And that all got passed by the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act that was signed into law by Ronald Reagan, which actually said that we have to keep our vaccine public health policy intact. And so the compromise is going to be that those of you that sacrifice yourself or sacrifice your children for the greater good, then we will just pay you money, just pay you off. And that's the way it was originally set up. And now it's much more adversarial. You have to prove causation. There's five criteria that have to be met in order to get the money. And they've actually said that less than 25% of people who even qualify for a compensation payment will ever see a dime of that money.
We had a couple here that they're this in our city who tried to sue the pharmaceutical company and the doctor for damage from the vaccination, and the court here wouldn't even allow them to do it. They dismissed the case.
Wow. The reason is for that is because you have to file it. You can't file it in civil court. There is a specific way that you have to file a vaccine injury case. You're much better off if you have an injury or you think you've had an injury to actually talk to a lawyer. That's the type of work that they do. You know, like doctors subspecialize, they're cardiologists and gastroenterologists and pediatricians. Well, lawyers subspecialize too. And there are about 12 law firms or so in the country that's what they specialize in, and that is what they do, is vaccine injury work. And you have you really are better served if you work with a firm that does that work rather than just going to a law firm. Any old law firm can file an injury claim, but it may not be their area of expertise.
One of the things, and we only have like 1 minute left, one of the things we're asked a lot is thimerosal out of vaccinations? Well, we've heard that they're still using up the old. Is it really?
Well, they're still not using up the old. The old went off the formulary back in 2004. However, it still is in tetanus boosters, and it still is in multi-dose vial flu shots. And so, in some of the other ones, there's some manufacturing process that they take it out, which there's a big long story to that. We don't really have time to go into. But it's out of most of the vaccines except multi-dose flu shots, and it's not out of tetanus boosters.
Okay, the book is 320 pages chock full of information and references. It's not opinion, but a courageous and determined view offering irrefutable facts that fly in the face of what we're being told by the CDC and traditional medical experts. You know, Mayor Eisenstein, we just talked about a quote about him earlier, but he says, saying no to vaccines is recommended for all professionals involved in the treatment of children, all parents and grandparents concerned about mandated vaccines, and all politicians, members of administrative bodies and medical societies who have the responsibility of passing vaccine legislation that impact our children. This book has been described as a wake-up call to parents. Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny, for your courage and your book. You've doubtless saved many children from being maimed and many parents from being tortured by what those in charge are doing to our most valuable resource, our children.
Thank you so much, and have a good evening.
Dr. Tenpenny will certainly be back, and she's helping stop the mutilation of our children and our genetic pool. Thank you for listening. This is BBS Radio.